Jo, thank you for coming to chat to So Hot right now. And I guess for also being one of the only art galleries that's really keeping the Halloween sentiment alive.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for having me here.
It's such a pleasure to have you in studio. And you know, what I love about this exhibition is that it feels highly collaborative in the sense that you have a lot of Sydney artists and international artists, and all of the pieces play off each other in representing and politicizing horror as we know it.
Yep.
How did you and Megan use the space to take visitors on a journey about horror?
So I guess it started all around one work that is a really fantastic dance film called Ditch Plains by Loretta Fahrenholz. She's a German artist, but I came across her work in New York, and the film is shot around Brooklyn. And Loretta worked with a dance troupe called Ringmaster's Crew, and they body pop their way around this dystopian sort of sci-fi dreamlike version of Brooklyn. And it was such a fantastic film that inspired really the genesis of the show. And the experience of the gallery when you go into it, it's really like that film almost explodes out of the screen, and all of the other work kind of just adds to that environmental kind of experience of the show.
It's very eerie and very musical at the same time. And there was a certain line that really stuck out to me, at least. There is always an end after an end. And it feels very much like Loretta is foreshadowing something, that, you know, a lot of the evil and the destruction that kind of happens in our world is very cyclical in nature, and it's sort of never ending unless we collectively do something about that. What was her, like, intent with sort of making that film?
Oh, there's so much in that line, and it's great you brought that out. I think, in a way, it underscores much of the show, and even though the show in many ways is quite playful, the idea is looking at horror as a mode through which we can learn and reflect on our current society, the current way we approach art, but also in terms of environment, in terms of technology, in terms of social injustice, and the way that you talk about the fact that it's cyclical, that an end will follow an end. Hopefully there's also a redemptive quality in horror in that learning process, and we can actually maybe not repeat the same mistakes again. Yeah. If we start talking about what's going wrong.
Absolutely.
And what isn't working, and become more open to alternative. You know, it happens it was filmed in and around Hurricane Sandy, and so you see this kind of environmental destruction that was very real. So she intersperses these fictional narrative moments with real documentary footage, and there are people queuing up for petrol, and there's also, you get the sense of a degraded environment. But it really touches also on race. It touches on socioeconomic responses to environmental catastrophes. So, you know, it's a big topic now that natural disasters aren't, in fact, natural, or at least the aftermath isn't, and there is institutionalized, systemic social injustice that affects how that so-called natural disaster actually plays out for different people, whether it's an economic thing or a racial divide. So it's so topical in that way. You also see a sort of stop and frisk situation with police, and again that speaks to race and social injustice in that way, and in a systemic way. So there's so much to unpack in all of the works.
There's a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
And I guess touching on race and kind of exploring that notion, you've got a Halloween celebration coming up, and Safda Ahmed is another Sydney-based artist that will be exhibiting and performing with Hazine, his Muslim Black Death Metal band.
Yeah.
Now, I just love that whole term in itself, Muslim Black Death Metal band.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people would have heard that specific type of music until this exhibition. And death metal, as we know it, in its root, it's destructive, it's angry in many ways, it's anti-establishment. what is the politics behind his zine?
So Safda and his other bandmate, Jean, they dress up as Muslim zombies. So all of Safda's artwork, whether it's his zines, his animations, or whether it's Hazine, his band, it's really using the Muslim zombie motif as a way to start conversation about anti-Islamophobia, about dehumanization of Muslims and racism broadly, and using this actually quite fun way in to a really important topic right now.
It sounds very hectic. It sounds very immersive. And I think another very immersive performance art that will be happening is Angela Goh's Body Loss. I know she performed for your opening night and she's going to be back again for the Halloween party. Can you tell us a bit about this performance and how she does play with light, with like installations?
Angela Goh is an incredible artist who works with dance, or a dance artist, however you want to term it. And we're really excited for the second part that's happening tonight. For those of you who actually saw the first part, it won't be the same. She's working with another incredible artist tonight, and that's Eugene Choi. So the two of them will be performing in part two. Angela Goh is working with the idea of the disembodied voice. So she uses a voice looper. So she creates the sound at the beginning and then uses a voice looper, so that voice that she produced then has this very ghostly, echoey continuation throughout the dance as she moves around the space. The use of light and sound means that her work can remain in the gallery space even when she's not performing live. So there's this kind of invisible dance that happens when you get up and close to the installation and you can hear that disembodied voice again. Angela's work speaks to horror and also to the female body, and in this case obviously it's in many ways the body becomes absent for much of the work when she's not performing live. Mm-hmm. And there's this disconnection between voice and body too in the performance. She's really looking at this disparity when it comes to the gendered body, the female gendered body, between horror and disgust, and then this kind of angelic, idyllic idea of the woman, the feminine.
I feel like she's a very sort of omnipresent type of performer, a type of artist. And I think it's amazing that she is kind of daring to tamper with this idea to kind of speak to a larger demographic of women that haven't been represented, and to kind of even portray the ugly side of that.
Mm.
Because, I mean, for so long, we haven't been a priority for people to document, for people to celebrate in social history, in pop culture. And when we have, we've been fetishized, or we've been feared
exactly
as that crazy, demanding woman. How does Angela's work speak to that?
She very much plays up this kind of horror aesthetic. So herself as a female performer, she undoes that image of women that's put forward through the media that we're all increasingly aware of, the stereotypical representation of the polite, sweet, innocent woman, or on the other hand, of course, you know, the slut, or the woman who you know, steals other people's babies, and all, you know, that other horrific portrayal of women. In this performance, or at least I can only speak to part one, Angela, at the end, for example, she had a bowl of raspberries, and she was eating this bowl of raspberries in this way that became oppressive and grotesque, and they were spilling out of her face. And, you know, it looked on the one hand like that kind of awful body horror of guts and things coming out of her face. But of course, raspberries have that sweet connotation of innocent women who, you know, no doubt cook.
It's a very conflicting yeah. image. What was the response to these performances on your opening night? Just take us back to that.
Yeah,
day.
So on the opening night, it was just a fantastic reception to her work. Angela is an incredibly gripping performer. So in many ways, she's very humble. She doesn't overplay what she's doing. And yet you'd look around the audience and everyone's eyes were absolutely glued on her and what she was doing. She was, you know, she'd do things that were really quite subtle, certainly in terms of her voice and what she was doing there. And then in other ways, she was hanging off walls, she was standing on plinths, she was really becoming physical. And she also directed the audience around the space in the way that she moved. So people were literally having to get up and move around her and change their perspective. So she's a very commanding performer, and we're really excited to see part two tonight.
No, that sounds fantastic. And I think it's interesting because horror as we know it, horror stories and characters, they for so long have posed as fictional representations of the fears we kind of do face in society or even personally, like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, like classic figures, their portrayal of the good and evil that kind of reside in our souls. Or Frankenstein is a representation of the existential fears of alienation, you know, of our relationship to the world around us.
Mm.
And what I love about Warm Bodies is that it does carry that intent of horror, that, you know, that mirror to our socio-political fears that we're currently battling. Do you feel that in the rest of these artworks? Tell us about the other artworks.
Absolutely. So, for example, if you look at Adham Faramawe, who's a UK-based artist who's taken over our art store, for Adham, who is very much inspired by horror but also sci-fi, he often uses as a recurring motif in his work this special effect of slime in his video works, and the slime ends up kind of encompassing the actual screen itself. And for Adham, he's actually referencing theory that is looking at slime as a metaphor for queerness and the moving away from binaries, for example, you know, something being liquid or something being hard, and actually moving toward this notion of identity that is fluid, that can mutate.
Yeah, absolutely. And another thing that I really did enjoy particularly in this exhibition is Philip Stern's work, because he has kind of physicalized data through these kind of large scale rugs. And that's something that, you know, we can't usually put our hands on because it's, you know, it's on the internet. It's something that we can't really touch, but he's managed to do that. Can you tell us about some of his work?
Yeah, Philip Stearns is a Brooklyn-based artist. He works a lot with glitch and glitch aesthetics. And as part of that, he works with glitch textiles. This work is called Fragmented Memory. There are these two really large tapestries, as you said. They were created by Philip taking the physical memory from his computer, so taking the binary data, turning that into image, and then turning that image again into a digitally woven tapestry. So there's a shift from him and his everyday activities and the desires and fears that feed into his navigation of the internet or what he writes in his emails or the things that we all do in that everyday way that integrates our personal lives with technology. And he's taken something that we experience almost in this invisible way, and as you say, he's turned it into not only something physical but something that speaks to craft, and that in and of itself isn't something you necessarily normally see in a contemporary art context.
Yeah, I think in your exhibition, well, not only do you have zombies, you've got artworks that present rot and human bacteria and how that's developed. Also mutation and mangled, like, genitalia. Can you talk a bit more about those more sort of out there works?
Yeah, so alongside the post-apocalypse sub-theme that I just mentioned, there's also a lot of body horror. And the two works that you were referring to there definitely sit within that area. So there's Juz Kitson, who's an absolutely incredible local artist who also spends a lot of time in the ancient porcelain city of China. And Juz Kitson is presenting a couple of incredible installation works in the show. One of them is hanging in the space, and that one hasn't been seen before. And Juz combines in these object installations porcelain kind of limbs, genitalia. So there's a real morphing of what we know. There's it kind of speaks to the depths, the darkest depths of our psychology, in a sense, and also those challenging taboo lines between animal and human, between what is attractive and sexual and sensual and beautiful, because her works are in many ways incredibly beautiful.
It's like this meld between beautiful but also disgusting.
Yes.
And that's kind of symbolic of a lot of the works. Absolutely. That are presented.
Yeah.
And it was also part of that agenda in creating this work, how we may succumb to our animal instincts. Mm. I mean, eventually, because not only is there human genitalia, you know, there's a lot of like pieces of fur, sort of like porcelain animal genitalia and teat and stuff like that.
Yeah. And when you think about, when you just think about fear, fear is always brings us back to our most animalistic selves. So, you know, we can think that we're progressive. We can certainly hope that the society that we live in is, but our fears are constantly being are reminding us of that kind of very essential, fundamental human capacity to be scared of what we don't know. This horror post-apocalypse motif served as this incredible tool to ask us to think more deeply about who we are and what we're doing and what where society is at and what our fears are and how can we challenge those and how we can be pushed outside of our comfort zones.
It's a very unique exhibition, I would say that.
There's a lot in it. A lot in it. And yeah, so while it does create this unified kind of experience that you were talking about, you go in and you feel like you're in this sort of scary, surreal environment. But absolutely, you need to dedicate your time with each of the works and really engage with what each of the artists are doing.
Jo, thank you for coming in. It's been an absolute pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.